This is an SJC Radio production.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This is Pit Stop with Mr. Bird on SJC Radio.
Welcome to episode 22 of season 8 of Pit Stop. The first part of the recording is about my trip to Jerez for the World Superbikes. And in the second part, Finn joins me for a chat about the latest happenings in MotoGP. I'm speaking to you from my hotel room in Jerez. It's Friday evening. Flew into Seville Airport this afternoon, picked up my car. When I picked up my car, the chap at the desk, when he was doing the paperwork, said, "Oh, we've got the same birthday," which happens to be tomorrow, the 28th. He then asked me where I was going, and I said, "I'm going to Jerez for the World Superbike." And he said, "Well, I'm going there as well." So, you know, I might bump into him tomorrow, who knows. Drive down from Seville to Jerez, that was about an hour and a bit, quite an easy drive. First impressions of Jerez, the town. Well, my hotel is right in the middle of town. It's really nice. Just been out for a meal, lovely atmosphere in town. And there's lots of Brits around as well, actually. Really looking forward to going to the racetrack tomorrow. For me, it's so exciting visiting a new track for the first time. So really excited about it. Well, it's Saturday evening. Just got back from the racetrack. Journey there took about 20 minutes. Not very far at all. What surprised me is when I bought my ticket, it was how cheap it was. 30 euros for 2 days. That's incredible value for money. I mean, a MotoGP ticket would be at least three times that. When I entered the circuit, one of the first people I saw was Daniel, the chap from the car rental check-in. So I spent a bit of time with him and his mate Pepe, which was nice. First impressions of Jerez, the racetrack. It's a really beautiful circuit. It's also very compact, which means you can get from, let's say, the paddock to the back straight. That would take you no more than about 5 minutes maximum, probably less than that. So it's very easy. It takes no time at all to move from one part of the circuit to another. The weather was fantastic, 22 degrees, and really, you know, very, well, for me, it was hot in the sun. It was hot, so I did spend some time in the shade. Particularly nice, you know, when you hear the weather so bad at home. The timetable isn't the fullest timetable I've ever seen. We had, when I arrived at the track, it was, there was free practice for World Superbikes going on. After that, there were the two Super Pole qualifying sessions for World Supersports and World Superbikes. And then we had the first World Supersport race, followed by the first World Superbike race. I watched both qualifying sessions from the last corner, the Jorge Lorenzo corner. Really good place to watch. In World Superbike qualifying, Bautista was particularly dramatic in the braking zone for that corner. He went on to take pole position. World Supersport race, I watched that from the start finish straight. There was the television screen there. That was good. Race completely dominated by Bulliger. For the World Superbike race, I went back to the final corner. What did I see? I saw Locatelli overtake both the Kawasaki's. Saw Petrucci overtake a number of people there as well. Also saw quite a big crash. I think it was Vandermark and the BMW lost it under braking. His bike actually hit the air fence in front of me, so that was very dramatic. One of the best things about going to a World Superbike race is something called the Paddock Show, in the paddock, there's a big stage. On that stage, there's sort of entertainment throughout the day. There's a DJ, there's quizzes, there were flamenco dancers, there were interviews with the riders, and they also did the podium ceremony there as well. That's included in your entry ticket, and also entry to the paddock is free as well. What's great about being in the paddock itself is I saw almost all the riders. So the access you get at a World Superbike race is on a different level to a MotoGP, where you would never, ever get to see the riders. What I got now is some of the atmosphere from the paddock show. Sunday evening, just had my dinner. I've had one of the best days I've ever had at a racetrack. This is largely due to the fact that I witnessed one of the all-time classic World Superbike races. In race three, we had this unbelievable battle between Toprak and Bautista at the front. They changed places so many times at the flag. Toprak just bit Bautista, but unfortunately on the last lap he went over the green paint on the exit of the final corner, and that means you have to drop a place. So despite Toprak crossing the line first, Bautista actually inherited the victory. Today I discovered a great place to spectator Jerez, and that was from the very large grandstand behind the paddock, from where you can see probably two-thirds of the circuit. A very good view of what they call the stadium section, and in front of me were those two very fast right-hand corners going into the Jorge Lorenzo hairpin, which again you can see from the grandstand. So that was really good. You could also see turns one and two. During the race, I saw Bautista overtake Toprak into the hairpin, but I also saw Jonathan Rea crash at turn two. Over the 2 days, I walked as much the circuit as I could, and there's no doubt that this was the best place to watch from. I met up with Daniel and Pepe again. In fact, I watched the World Supersport race with them, and we watched that from a small grandstand on the exit of the stadium section. That was good because it was much closer to the track, and also we were pretty much on sort of ground level, so we've got a really good feel for the speed of the bikes. I also met up with them in the paddock at the end of the day, because Daniel is friends with Lorenzo Baldessari, well, superbike rider, former Moto2 rider, so we had a chat with him, which was nice. It's Tuesday night. I'm now back in the UK after my trip. I spent the Monday seeing the sights in Jerez town. There's plenty to see there. There was an old castle, which was particularly interesting. I then flew back Tuesday afternoon. Looking back at Jerez, I would strongly recommend a trip to Jerez for the World Superbikes next year. I think next year it's a couple of weeks earlier, so it'll be even warmer. I would say if you're going to Jerez, if I've got one tip for the World Superbike race, and that would be to take your own lunch each day, because there are only three food outlets altogether, and you know, the crowd was pretty big and there are really big queues, so it's much easier to buy your own food the evening before. Great trip. I would definitely go back next year.
This is Pit Stop with Mr. Bird on SJC Radio.
Oh. Hi, Finn.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. I do have to... My laptop's not working. So I just got my big computer and...
What? That's right.
So...
That's right. I can hear you perfectly clearly. That's good.
Yeah.
So you're back at school, aren't you?
Yes.
Perhaps rather than go through each race, so we've had five races, perhaps it's best to sort of summarise what's been going on in the world of MotoGP. So I think when we last spoke, Bagnaia had, he might have had a 60-point lead or something like that. And what we've seen over the course of the last five races is that lead being whittled down by Martin, and actually in Indonesia, so basically Martin's been on a winning spree, he's been winning everything, and Indonesia after the sprint race, Martin was actually leading the championship. Unfortunately, the next day in the main race, which he was dominating, he fell off.
And yeah, I remember you sent a message saying that he was leading.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I must have sent you that message on the Saturday, because that was after the sprint race when Martin took the championship lead. The next day he fell off whilst leading, and he lost the championship lead. And then we go to Australia, that amazing race in Australia, Finn, where Martin took that gamble.
Yeah.
I think he was on the, was he on the soft rear tyre or something? He took a gamble on the rear tyre. And it didn't pay off, and it was on the last lap that he went from first place down to about fifth place. So, having taken the lead in the championship, he then lost it to Bagnaia, and it obviously grew as a result of the Australian MotoGP, where Bagnaia finished second in that. Who won the Australian Grand Prix, Finn?
Oh, Martin.
No, he didn't.
Oh, Bagnaia.
No, think about it. It was the first ever win.
Did Antonio?
No. It was his first ever win. It's been a long time coming.
One of the Italian fellas.
No, he's French.
Oh God, Zarco.
Yes. Yeah, that was amazing. Just a brilliant result. First ever win for Zarco. It might be his only ever win, because I don't know if you're aware, next season he's going to the LCR Honda team. He won't win on a Honda, because nobody can win on a Honda. So it's just as well he got that victory at Australia, because it might be his last. And what he always used to do, Zarco is quite famous for doing a backflip if he wins a race, and he did a backflip at the end of the race.
What, like on the bike?
No, he gets off the bike.
All right.
He goes over to the fans, so climbs up the sort of banking, and then there's a sort of climbs up a fence, and then there's a backflip.
Right.
So that's good. Now, I would have said the Australian race was the best race of the season, but up to that point, I'd have said it was the best race of the season. But I would argue that the Thai race, weekend just gone, I'd argue that was even better.
Thailand was good. Yeah.
Yeah, we had that. What was good about it? Probably the first, one of the few races where we've had a group at the front. So we had Martin, Binder and Bagnaia battling over those last few laps. It's not something we often see in MotoGP. What we tend to see in MotoGP is somebody, invariably Martin, disappear off into the distance. There haven't been that many races where we've had changes of lead in the last few laps, but we got that in Thailand. I really like that racetrack, actually. Yeah, it's a really good track. Now, what's interesting, Vin, is if we go back, 5 or 6 weeks when we last spoke,
yeah,
we were saying that this year that the racing hasn't been as good as previous years, and this is down to sort of tire pressures and what have you. But I would argue that the racing in the last few races has been really, really good. And I think I was reading, was it Martin was saying that the riders have kind of learned to kind of ride around this tire pressure issue. He was saying, for example, in Indonesia, another circuit I really, really like, he was saying that instead of staying close behind another rider, if you do that, yeah, your front tire will overheat, the tire pressures will go through, and you'll lose grip. He said, instead of doing that, you hang back a bit, and then you basically close up on them and overtake them in one move. And that's what Martin did in Indonesia. All his moves started off some way back where he was in, I guess you could say he was in clean air where his front tire wouldn't overheat. And then, and then you go for it. You close up and you overtake straight away. So I think what's happened is, I think the riders have got used to this sort of front tire pressure issue and have come up with ways of getting around it. And we've seen some brilliant racing the last few rounds. Mm-hmm. We've only got 3 rounds left. So there's no race this weekend, but we then got 3 in succession. You may or may not be aware, Finn, that I'm going to the last round, Valencia.
I am aware.
Yeah, I got my ticket yesterday, my race ticket. I booked it early because my concern was, and I booked the flight, I booked the hotel. My concern was that it's likely to go down to the last round and it could be a sellout. So I thought, get the ticket early. So I'm definitely going. So I'm really excited about that.
That's good, yeah. Where's that?
That's in Valencia in Spain.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That'd be my second visit to Spain. So that's the situation in MotoGP. Moto2, nothing's really changed since we last spoke. Last time we spoke, we said that old Pedro Acosta had got a decent lead over old Arbolino. Arbolino had a major dip in form. He's got slightly better, actually, the last couple of races. In fact, Arbolino won in Australia. He's very good in the rain, and it was a bit of a washout, the Australian race. It was stopped at half distance, and he was leading then. But that, in terms of the championship fight, that hasn't really changed much. Moto3 is the one which has changed dramatically. Now, I think the last time we spoke, it was pretty tight between... I'm not sure who's leading the championship when we last...
I think it was Dele Sanchu, wasn't it?
I don't think it was. It might have been Holgado from... I think Holgado might have been leading from Sasaki from... Messiah, can you check it on your phone?
I'll try to.
But I've got a feeling that Messiah will be leading the championship because Sasaki, who's been Mr. Consistent and has finished second in most of the races, he crashed out in Thailand. So I've got a feeling, Finn, that Masia is going to be first. And I think Sasaki will be second. But I don't know. I didn't see the tie race because, as you know, I was in Spain watching the World Superbikes last week.
Who did you think was winning?
Masia must be in the championship.
Yeah.
What points is he on?
230, sorry.
230. Who's in second? Is it Sasaki?
Yes.
On what?
213.
13?
Yeah.
And you said Masia was in 230?
Yeah.
That's quite a big lead. Doing the maths.
17 points.
Oh, that's not massive. Third place? No. Who's in third?
Alonso.
Alonso, that's right. So he won in Thailand. I haven't seen the Thai race because I videoed all the race. I videoed all the World Superbike race. Yeah. I videoed MotoGP. And I must have forgotten to set the video for the Moto3. So I haven't seen that. But yeah. I know Alonso won that. And what points is he on?
205.
Oh.
No, Dennis Onchu. Dennis Onchu. Sorry, not Dennis Onchu. Holgado is also on 205 in fourth.
Right, so actually those four are kind of still in it. Holgado really, it's funny because first part of the season, Holgado was pretty dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And just since halfway, he's sort of...
What happened to...
Disappeared, really.
What happened to David Munoz, or whatever he's...
David Munoz, who's a bit of a maniac, he actually won a race.
I like him.
I do. He's mad. I'm just trying to think which race he won. Let's have a think about this. Munoz, he did win a race.
Says he's got no victories here.
I'm sure. No, Munoz has definitely won. Can we just check that? Munoz. Yeah. Oh, no. I'm thinking Moreira, aren't I? I'm thinking of Diego Moreira won. Where did... Did Moreira win in Indonesia? I think he might. Can we just...
Yeah, I got it. I'm on it.
Yeah. I think he might have won in Indonesia, Moreira.
Moreira?
No, his name's Moreira. Where did he win?
Indonesia.
He did. It was Indonesia. Right, yeah. Very good. Right, I thought Munoz had won
Munoz
a race.
Munoz was third that race.
Right. It must have been, I was obviously getting Moreira and Munoz muddled up.
Yeah.
Are we 100% certain Munoz hasn't won?
I am.
I thought he won a race.
Apparently not.
Right, okay.
Well, I would like to know who's right, you or the MotoGP website, and I'm sure it's the MotoGP website.
I think it's probably MotoGP website.
Mm.
He will win a race at some stage. So Moto3 and MotoGP are very interesting in terms of the championship. Moto2, as you said, is pretty much settled. What's interesting about Moto2? I've just watched this afternoon the Moto2 race from Thailand. It wasn't the best Moto2 race I've ever seen, but Aldeguer won on the Boscoscoro speed up chassis. And what's interesting?
Who won?
There,
sorry,
it was Fermín Aldeguer, teammate of. Teammate of Alonso Lopez. What's interesting there is last season, Lopez completely outperformed Aldeguer.
Yeah.
But this year, I was expecting Lopez to challenge for the championship.
There are only 10 points in it between them two.
Yeah. But Lopez hasn't won a race this year. And Lopez has been sort of guilty of... He's made a lot of very rash manoeuvres... resulting in, he bumped into Sam Lowes in Mugello. He bumped into Jake Dixon in India. He's made lots of rash moves, and
maybe he just hates the British drivers, riders then.
Possibly, but last year he was the rider who led the most laps last year, and we haven't seen that form from him at all this year. And his teammate Aldeguer has been the dominant force in that team. Aldeguer has won two races this season, and he's dominant in Thailand. I just find that really interesting in motorbike racing. If we go back to Moto3, we're talking about Daniel Helgado dominating the championship, and then halfway through the season, almost sort of disappearing. I wonder if that's the for Helgado. I wonder if that was the pressure of leading the championship. And look at Moto 2 again. Look at talking about him just now.
The Yeti. Oh,
no.
Aaron Canet.
No. The chap who was second in the championship.
Arbolino.
Arbolino. Yeah. You know, he was, it was between him, you know, him and Acosta were neck and neck. And then all of a sudden, from, I think it was the British Grand Prix onwards, completely vanished. His form, a major dip in form. They're on the same bikes. I just find it really interesting because
I think they are on the same bikes in
motorbike. They are on the same bike, not the same team. They're on the same bike. But I find in motorbike racing, you as a rider, you have a far greater input into the performance of the bike than a Formula One driver does in his car. And I think what we see in motorbike racing is if riders lose a bit of confidence, you know, their form just drops off a cliff. A lot of motorbike riding, particularly Moto 2, Moto 3, a lot of it, I think, is psychological.
Right.
And if we go back, talking about, you know, how the sort of how riders' form can change just like that. Go back a year. Mm-hmm. Jorge Martin last year, himself and Bastianini were challenging for that. We're in competition with each other for that factory Ducati seat. And we know that Bastianini got the ride, and deservedly so, because, you know, Martin, I think he crashed up last season, had a terrible season. Go forward a year, go forward to the present day, Martin is the dominant force in MotoGP. Can explain that?
I can't.
But it isn't amazing. Jorge Martin is... They called him his nickname is the Martinator. He is the fastest rider in MotoGP. And although he's not leading the championship, he is favourite to win. He is just incredible. Now, in terms of what's coming up, so there's nothing this weekend MotoGP wise. Mm-hmm. Weekend after that, it's Malaysia. Weekend after that, it's Qatar. That'll be a night race.
And yeah, I like that one. That I like that. I like Qatar.
Will be Valencia.
I'll definitely be watching that.
You don't watch what, sorry?
I'll definitely be watching that one, Qatar.
Yeah.
I like that. Proper motorbike track, isn't it?
Yeah, and then we got Valencia. Valencia, it's funny. It's not a circuit I'm excited about going to because it's a bit of a rubbish. It's the worst circuit by a mile on the calendar, but it's the event. It's the last round of the season, so there's always like a sort of party sort of atmosphere there. But also, it looks like it's going to be a showdown. So can you imagine being in Valencia for championship showdown and Jorge Martin, a Spaniard, winning?
Oh, yeah. I've
got to be there. So that's why I'm going. So that should be amazing. On a completely different subject, this weekend, it's the last round of the World Endurance Championship, the Le Mans cars, which I love. But, and I've said this many, many times before, the calendar is so spaced out. I've kind of lost interest in the WEC because it had brilliant momentum after Le Mans. Then we had a great race at Monza and then no races for about a month. Then they went to that rubbishy Fuji track and then another month passes. You know, people have forgotten about the WEC and sort of looking ahead to next year. They've got to sort their calendar out. It's ridiculous. You know, got Formula One and you could argue MotoGP. You could argue they got too many races. Formula One definitely has too many races. My brother thinks that MotoGP has got too many. But my question to him was, I understand what he's saying, but which rounds would you drop?
Yeah, you got enough track. You got enough races in old Spain, don't you?
Well, funny enough, they actually dropped one this year. Aragon, they dropped this year.
I know.
So you've got Jerez. You're never going to drop Jerez because that's probably the biggest event. Barcelona is fantastic. Valencia is the season finale, and you'll always have the season finale at Valencia.
Yeah, I know, but it's like Formula One before they like fixed Abu Dhabi. You had to have it, but it was a rubbish track.
Yeah.
And then they fixed it and you made it pretty average.
Yes. I've got to be honest, Finn, I don't watch anything. What I will do, Formula One-wise, I don't watch anything at all. I will have a look at the Las Vegas circuit when they race there.
Yeah, I know. I haven't been watching much. I've watched, when there's been Formula One, I've watched the first five laps. Because the starts have been good. And...
To be honest, Finn, the moment you start watching MotoGP, you view Formula One drivers in a different light. I've said this last time. The last recording, I watch these MotoGP riders and these World Superbike riders. I have nothing but admiration for them, because if you said to me, right, we're going to teach you how to ride a MotoGP bike, we'll give you, you know, you, I would say no, there's no chance. I'm going to lean over and get my knee or elbow on the ground. That's never going to happen. But if you said to me, yeah, never. But if you said to me, we'll teach you how to be a Formula One driver, I say, yeah, I'll give that a go.
You're sat on top of something, or you're sat protected by a bunch of carbon fiber.
What I'm saying is, Formula One drivers, the Formula One is very safe. MotoGP is never going to be safe.
Yeah, I think I said something about never your personality.
It might, but.
Yeah, it does.
I just don't care about these Formula One drivers, but these motorbike riders, I have so much respect for them, because there's nowhere in a million years, no matter how much coaching I was given, I could ever, ever be able to do that. In fact, even if I was able to do it, I'd be too scared to do it.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that YouTube video where it's great actually, Valentino Rossi and Lewis Hamilton switch rides?
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah,
it's pretty cool. But
yeah,
Rossi seems a lot happier to be doing it than Lewis Hamilton.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. I think we'll wrap it up there, Finn. We'll get back together in about 4 weeks' time when I can tell you about my trip to Valencia.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Pit Stop with Mr. Bird. There's a few new things I want to make you aware of. We've got a new website, which you can find by going online to shows.acast.com/pitstop, where you can also find links to our Twitter and on the About page, more information about the hosts as well. We're also on lots more platforms in addition to where you're listening to us now. So we're now on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music and lots more, as well as TuneIn, like we've been on since we started. So head over to those platforms to subscribe on the most convenient one for you and find all our back catalogue of episodes to listen to again as well.